Whether you're doing a dance to your favorite artist in the office parking lot, or being guided into Warrior One in the break room before your shift, whether you're running on your Peloton tread at your mom's house while she watches the baby, or counting your breaths on the subway.
Inhaling and long exhaling.
Peloton is for all of us, wherever we are, whenever we need it. Download the free Peloton app today. Peloton app available through free tier or paid subscription starting at $12.99 per month.
Hello and welcome to Crushed by Margaret K. Bourne-Smith, a podcast about the dazzling highs and the disastrous lows of unrequited love. My guest today is the brilliant author and journalist, Daisy Buchanan. Daisy, welcome. I've got a quote of yours I'd like to open with.
Oh, blimey.
Yeah. You said, we should all seek to surround ourselves with people whom we choose, who choose us back and make us feel 10 times taller than we actually are. That is from your book, How to Be a Grown-Up. And that very much makes you sound like someone who doesn't go in for unrequited love. Is that the case?
Oh, well, Margaret, I have to tell you, that was hard-won knowledge.
How many years did it take you to learn it?
I mean, I started early, crush-wise. So I think really every single relationship I was in until I met my husband when I was 27, he wasn't my husband when I met him, was, you know, bad or sort of unrequited in some way. But yeah, you know, I think, as you know, so many of your brilliant guests have observed, crushes are how we find out who we are and the qualities that we want bestowed upon us. But yeah, lots of unrequited love over here. And I don't know, I mean, do you think it's character building? Everything horrible that's ever happened to me is apparently character building, says my mum. I'm not sure.
I think you probably can't. You can't really have a good relationship. And I mean, I'm not saying a bad relationship, but unless you've had some kind of like lesson, you need to make mistakes, don't you? You can't just go perfectly into something.
Well, I don't want to sound trite, but I think that when I did meet Dale, my husband, I had come out of a fairly dreadful long-term relationship. And then I did have a brief and awful fling with someone I had had a crush on from afar. And I think it really, really helped that that was so awful, because I think I was quite immature for a long time. And, you know, as I think, again, people have often, you know, said this being the case, you sort of, if someone's into you, you go off them a bit. It's that old, you know, low self-esteem. Like, well, I don't like me, so they shouldn't like me.
What an idiot.
But I really had this quite an intense connection with someone that was mostly in my head. It's quite gratifying now because I can, you know, the scales have fallen from my eyes. And it was, when I was, 26 years old, I thought they were a very famous writer. And now whenever I say their name to people, they're like, who? I'm not familiar, which, pleasing, deeply pleasing.
So not Martin Amis?
Not okay. Martin Amis.
I mean, I'm pleased to hear you didn't have a fling.
Not Martin Amis.
Oh, good. I'm glad you still got your sights set.
I'm not dreaming about it, but I think it's important to be open-minded.
Very good. Very good tone to strike. So what was your first crush?
I've been trying very hard to think about this. And the strong feelings.
Yes, because it's strong feelings, not necessarily romantic even or sexual, just something that's a bit out of control, I suppose.
When I was, I think, from the age of maybe 4 or 5, it was Kylie Minogue and then it was The Muppets and ABBA.
I mean,
and
good choices, I would say.
I do.
Quite safe. All quite far away from your actual, that's not a boy next
Kermit
door
the Frog,
thing, is it?
That was never going to happen. And I was trying to figure out Kermit the Frog because he's such an interesting character to love, because he spends quite a lot of time on his own when he's singing Rainbow Connection by the stream with his guitar.
Yes, he's a little bit heartbreaking, isn't he?
All of the other Muppets are like the definition of chaotic good. Crazy. And I wanted to be Miss Piggy. Of course I wanted to be Miss Piggy. And I think I wanted to be her, and I was in love with her a bit, because
I was a big girl. I was chubby and awkward, and this was often commented on. And she was, I thought Miss Piggy was like the most beautiful woman I'd ever seen in my life,
even though she was
a pig.
Yeah, an actual
and
pig.
A puppet.
You know.
And sort of proportionally, you know, beautiful and glamorous, but not. It was like I knew how to find a very healthy role model, pre. It was that heroin chic in the 90s hadn't really got going. I was a bit young for fashion mags, but I found
my
pig.
Yeah, she definitely wasn't heroin chic.
And I don't know whether it was because, I had quite a big family. I'm the eldest of six girls.
Wow.
Home was always sort of, quite loud and noisy and fun and intense. And someone like Kermit had this sort of, quiet, reflective
yes.
quality. And he was very sort of loving and forgiving and assembled by, all these fabulous freaks were all assembled around him and he kept the show on the road. I found that very appealing.
Yeah. Oh, no, I think he's a great role model to have as a crush. It's interesting, the thing with Miss Piggy, because that love, even though she is, you could say, entirely in denial about it, it's a bit unrequited, isn't it? Like, her ardour for Kermit is so massive. And he sort of, I mean, there's implications in some of the Muppet world that it's, that they're together. But I remember, certainly the original Muppets, they are not a happily functioning couple.
No.
They're very much him just trying to sort of cope with
all her energy and her intensity and him always trying to deflect her. But she is not in any way put off by that.
No, but you're right. I think that's very... very appealing. Like, she's just absolutely not bothered by rejection. Or if she is, it's just fury and hair flicking and, slam a door and then she's recovered and,
she can't be humiliated.
Role.
Sort of in the way that you just cannot actually imagine anyone dumping Mariah Carey. I loved Mariah Carey too. I thought she had big Miss Piggy
yes,
energy.
Yes, big Miss Piggy
I
energy.
I hope, in the unlikely event that she ever hears this, I hope she'll think it's a compliment.
Oh, I think she'd get it. You'd have to.
I met Kermit.
What do you mean?
When the Muppet movie came out, the 2012 one, I went to a press junket and I had an interview with Kermit. And is it Pepe the Prawn? Is he the new guy? Controversial new guy?
Yeah.
Sort of Scrappy-Doo of the Muppets.
Oh, dear.
And obviously they were there with their puppeteers, but I was talking to Kermit and Pepe. And you forget completely.
Yeah, I think that's the done thing. I think
Avenue
you're not supposed
Q,
to.
Where they're... all the puppeteers are on stage all the time, but you just stop seeing them after half a song. And it was that. And I was, I couldn't tell Kermit how...
You didn't say I've always loved you.
I have a picture. Run away, forget Piggy. Possibly partly because I think my loyalty to Miss Piggy is such that I never could.
Yeah, it does sound a bit like it's sort of a crush on a couple, a crush on a relationship.
I know you've talked about a lot before.
Yeah. It's they're living out something that we've, that you know you can't be a part of. I don't know how you and Kermit... I mean, it's a tricky thing, especially I don't know how big your flat is. If you've got him and the puppeteer that you have to...
We
cook
do.
For. And...
Yeah. You need like a hall or a corridor that's long enough for a good hi. And I don't think I can manage that.
Yeah, exactly.
Not in this economy.
Fair enough.
First time it maybe felt a little bit sexual or romantic.
Was not Kermit.
Declan Donnelly, as in Anton Deck, who has also gone on to do all right for himself. Things have gone quite
insanely. I was thinking this about how weird it is that they're the still seen as the lads next door, and they've just been like uber famous and rich since they were incredibly young. It's amazing that they've kept that.
I mean, next door
reputation.
In their gated community might be 10 miles down from your gated community. but I think it was when they had their TV shows post Biker Grove, which I was not allowed to watch because it might be... I was not allowed to watch so many things and I assumed they're all like filthy and sex-filled. And
I think you'd be very disappointed by Biker Grove in that case.
There's barely anything in Kissing in Grange Hill.
Oh, no.
No, but
they're very rough, aren't they? They don't speak well.
they had this TV show Anton Deck did that was on CBBC, I think. Was it even called CBBC then? Who knows?
Oh.
And
what was the show? Not SMTV?
It was before SMTV.
Oh, right.
I think
God,
it might have
no
just been called
this.
The Anton Deck Show.
Oh.
And they were in the papers a bit with that. And I guess it must have been, I think it would have been around 1995. I would have been about 10. So they, I guess, would have just kind of, and they were kind of in the middle of their pop careers. And I bought them. I think I'm the only
I mean, their pop careers, not that long.
Anton Deck's third album.
Fuller.
No,
three albums. Good Lord. I never would have got that right in a quiz.
I know. Well, I'm waiting for the pub where one day I am asked to name.
Go on, what's the third album called?
Oh, God, it's awful.
Oh,
I don't
Daisy,
know.
Don't.
I know. I know the
down.
Single. It's called Better Watch Out, which, and there was a there was another single called Shout.
I vaguely remember
Lou
Shout.
Reed
was that a
ripoff?
Yeah, was that a an acoustic number? Because I seem to remember
Deck sat on a stool and played
Deck
the guitar.
Sort of confessed to the fact that he'd learned two chords.
Yes, I remember that on Live and Kicking.
And everyone was like,
Deck,
wow.
When did you start playing the guitar? About 10 minutes ago. You see, he's funny. He's a very funny
he
guy.
He is fun. Oh, no, they're fun. I mean, God, that's what's kept them going through all of this.
But I think he just had such a nice kind of friendly face. And I remember my parents thinking it was hilarious because I was, you know,
really?
as a big girl. Look, even now, you're 10 years old and you're 2 inches taller than him, which is a very shallow thing.
Oh, it is, I know. Like Tom
actually,
Holland's done a lot to, you know, Tom Holland and Zendaya.
He's
done a lot to sort of go, what's your problem? What's the problem with being shorter than
my husband is 2 inches shorter than me.
Amazing.
And I think perhaps that maybe that was how Deck kind of cast my type.
So when you met your husband, you were like, oh, I think you're the same height as Deck and
yes. Now, if you could just put this mask on and maybe go to this clinic and have your... No. But I do think there is nothing sexier than a shorter fellow who doesn't want to be taller, like the opposite of a Napoleon complex.
Yes.
I don't know if that has
oh, my
word.
God, you're
Everyone's
so
really
right.
Embraced who they are.
Similarly, I really love a tall woman in heels.
Mm.
I really love a tall woman who is not stooping in photos with her shorter man.
It's so powerful, isn't it? Who's the actress who played Sally in Third Rock from the Sun?
Oh, God, I can't remember her name, but I love her.
And she was amazing. And that was a big
thing. She's got Miss Piggy
as well. Yes,
energy,
because that was,
vibes.
I think, on when I was like a teen, pre-teen. And I loved her so much for being just so, like, the most gorgeous person I'd sort of ever seen, but also gorgeous in such... There was nothing... She wasn't trying to be little or delicate or petite or...
I don't know if you've seen Starstruck.
Yes!
When I watched that...
Rose Matafeo,
like,
there's another one.
Well, this is it.
Everyone.
I mean, yeah, when I watched that, I was like, I really could have done with seeing this when I was young because she's just...
When she comes to that party in the tux and all the awful posh people are, I said, awful posh people, in a posh way then. But they're like, you're catering. And you just think,
she's just so gorgeous and so unapologetic. And, you know, I think all of the heroines that I'd seen when I was young were, sort of a bit tiny and waif-like, and it's awful to feel like I'm not that, and I don't know how to become that, you know, apart from try and make myself as small as possible. And it's so sad, and it was just so brilliant to see someone so big in every way, you know, just going, look, I'm loud.
Her soul is big. Like, well, Amy Schumer,
yes.
Who I think there's an interview where she said that I think maybe when she made Trainwreck, she was sort of, she'd really, really made an effort to, you know, as the awful thing that Hollywood,
you have to
tacitly
lose weight
encourages people to do. And she was finally a size whatever. And all the, there was so much hatred on the sort of the online comments and people talking about her body and how, and she's like, What is the point, even? Why? And I know that Amy Schumer is, I believe, possibly problematic in various ways. But I loved, especially in her show, the way she, the character, and she allowed herself to be in those sketches, that she could present herself as sexy and desirable, but also present herself as the a woman who was also sexy and desirable in her sweatpants,
yes,
eating something from,
yeah,
a bag, being like,
yeah,
I'm not getting what I want. I don't really care.
Yeah, she just owns it.
And I think I was going to say that this, you know, the role models that we have seen growing up, I think a lot of media and culture, the woman was like a love interest, and she,
yeah,
had to be little and delicate and two-dimensional because she just didn't have any kind of a storyline.
Yeah, and she's just sort of flitting around someone's
and I think that's
shoulders.
What a lot of our crushes are. Well, I want to like this person because this is the only way I can get close to a storyline.
Yeah. Yes,
but,
oh,
I think,
God,
the first moment where I sort of understood the point of sex and what it was fully, because I think I was quite hormonally a very early developer.
Mm-hmm.
And I do remember being quite horny quite early, not really knowing what it was or what was going on, and being very Catholic and very shamed,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, sort of masturbating really quite early, not really knowing what I was doing and not stopping either. But kind of, I have a very vague idea. This is bad and I'm going to go to hell for it. But here we are. Leonardo DiCaprio in Romeo and Juliet. And you know that I think the first time you see Romeo and he's just on a wall, smoking a fag.
Hot.
And it was very, I think as well, because of the whole kind of, you know, oh, like, do you like, you know, good boys or bad boys?
Yeah.
And Deck was so sweet.
Such
and
a
nice
good boy.
And
yeah.
Such a good boy. But also that kind of, I remember my friend Megan really liked this boy called Dan. And she said to him, oh, I just can't resist a bad boy. And we were 11 or 12. And you know what made Dan a bad boy?
Go on.
When we got our timetables, he read the timetable and he did a poem. And the poem went, art. Oh, I need a fart, and he got sent out the room.
I mean, that's that is bad.
And so I thought that, you know, fancying a bad boy who rhymed art with fart.
But where had she got that? Like, but you understood that as a bad boy thing.
Oh,
is this what we're fed?
You know what it was? It was bloody Grease.
I was just thinking, what is it? It's the leather jacket. So where is that, you know... apart from the Fonz, it's John Travolta and obviously Danny Zuko. Danny Zuko is definitely a worse boy than the Fonz.
Yeah, he's who was not young on that
show.
But also was kind of presented as the slightly rough and ready alternative to Richie. I was thinking as well, I guess, about maybe Top Gun, and they weren't bad boys, but they were tough boys.
Yeah.
And there was a sort of, oh, we're not, you know, we're emotionally reticent and we do this scary thing, but actually we are getting in touch with our, you know, this is the precursor to Brokeback Mountain. I don't know.
Yeah, who knows what that is? I remember when my daughter was very young, we saw a proper bad boy, proper, you know, motorbike, leather jacket. And the thing that really made him a bad boy was that he drove under the underpass, which you're really not allowed to do on a motorbike. And we watched this happen, me and my husband and my little girl, and she was probably like two. And she was transfixed by this. And after it happened, my husband just went, oh, God, I hope that wasn't a formative moment. And she's shown no sign of interest in bad boys, which I'm pleased about. But I do sort of think, is that, I feel like we're being shown that rather than, oh, but maybe that does come from somewhere as well, transgressive.
And yet conversely, I think there is an energy I respond to, and I know I'm going to sound like a big, terrible hippie. I had a friend who tried to come out to her dad and say that she'd had a boyfriend for quite a long time, and then now she's sort of in her late 20s and she'd met a girl. But her coming out speech was so like, you know how I just love people's energy, Dad? And I'm like, you know, it's just all about the universe, isn't it? And so she thought...
I really love this as an opening.
She'd done it. And
I
he
really
thought
that you
oh,
don't.
It's just her usual, you know, lovely, fluffy, hippie chat, because that's the sort of thing she said. And then when she brought the girl home, I was really like, what's going on?
So what did he think had happened? Like, had she just done a speech about the universe, and he was like, I don't know what you're on about. Did he connect it to her new partner?
Her parents
did. She managed to do that even?
They were super, super liberal in a sort of, I don't know, you know, lovely Guardian reading, a way that I think maybe lots of parents are, where when they have to apply things a bit close to home, it's fine, but it just takes a little bit of getting used to. So I think he'd maybe just tuned out a bit. And knowing my friend, she'd probably gone on some kind. She's probably just like chatting about Georgia O'Keeffe, and she thought that was a fair representation of what she needed to say. The energy thing. Maybe she could do a poem. That's a sort of caper. So my novel Insatiable is a sort of, it's a queer love story, and it's everyone having it off with everyone. And I am married to a man, and I have almost entirely dated men. Mm-hmm. There has been the odd woman.
How odd were they?
Pretty bizarre. But it's something, on the one hand, I feel, you know, when I talk about sort of fancying women, firstly, that I'm trespassing. I move through the world with such freedom. And the thing about, you know, being married to a man, you do get a fair old amount of, you know, male privilege by proxy.
Flutter around nearest to them.
But also, I was thinking about, you know, growing up, and if I'd even like mentioned to anyone about, you know, vaguely, you know, liking a guy. And again, it's that sort of energy thing, isn't it? And I think I'm possibly, you know, I tend to find myself more. No, I don't know. I think because in terms of sort of famous people and stuff, it's probably, you know, even Stevens, even
Stephanie. Really?
but yeah, at school, it just, you know, things were bad enough already. Yeah. I couldn't have.
Oh, no, exactly. If you're already on the outside.
And I think I fancied enough boys to sort of not to worry.
Interesting.
But I really, really hope now, from, you know, where I'm sitting and standing, the world does feel like a genuinely more open-hearted and inclusive place. But I'm a 37-year-old woman on Instagram. I'm not 14 and at school.
Yeah. Yeah, although I think it's quite heartening from what I know. You know, I have a 13-year-old at school, and it's definitely not, you know, it's not the utopia that you would want, but it's definitely better than it was in those terms. They seem to be quite casual about, you know, having labels and coming out to each other, and I, you know, that's, you just hope that we just keep moving in that.
And do you
direction.
Get a sense of, are there posters on the walls? Are there famous crushes? Are there known crushes?
I mean, I don't.
Is it?
I, do you know, we haven't quite got to that. I mean, you know, and I do only really, I know my daughter, I know my nieces, you know. I don't know a lot. It's not, I don't get to see a lot of teenagers' bedrooms. But I just, from the conversations, I think it's going, it's a much more relaxed, she's, you know, she's hot or whatever.
I mean, I do think
also,
as well,
they're not talking to their parents
well,
about it.
Well, that's it. That crushes. It's like the first thing you can have that's all yours.
Yes.
And just yours that you've not got to share. And I think, you know, with having such a big family, it was really important to me to kind of own something. But then I remember my sister really well. She had a, I hope she doesn't mind me saying this.
You
can
check
it. A fake crush on Ronan from Boyzone. And it was that, like, oh, he's the one. And it's like, oh, this is what I say to appear normal.
Oh, really?
Because I know something that you, that comes up a lot as well, that you talk about a lot, is the way that we often, with, you know, boy bands, there's a, oh, this is the one that the girls with low self-esteem will like. That it was almost, I think, her way of passing, I suppose, of joining in.
I like handsome boys in boy bands. Yeah, I do.
I'm a regular teenager. Yeah. I'm not confused and terrified by what is happening and what is going on. Oh, gosh, but Margaret, I was thinking about how I was always derided for all of my crushes. I was the only person at school who liked Deck.
Really? Because I liked Deck. Aww. And I mean, I'm loads older than you, so it was, you know, I'm fancied.
Wish I'd known you then.
People.
You could have reached down from the fourth form or wherever it was and said, look, it's going to be okay.
I think Deck was one of the first people that I was like, he's about my age. That's exciting. I could marry him.
Because that's all it takes.
So
isn't it?
Weird. Yeah. No, if you're the same age and a similar height, I'm probably am similar height to him. That's how you meet people.
Just shy of 5'6", so yeah.
He's 5'6", is he?
I think so.
Okay.
Oh gosh,
so he's taller than me.
In the way that celebrities' ages sort of change, and sometimes it takes like, you know, the opposite of dog years. A celebrity year could be 5 normal years.
Oh, Jerry Halliwell, that age was creeping up.
Cheryl
years.
Cole used to be older than me, and we were the same age for a bit, and I think she's now younger than me.
She's still at school, isn't she?
She's, I think she's doing really well in GCSEs, great predicted grades.
Bless her.
I remember there was a band called Catch, and it would have been, I think, 98, 99, it would have been 13, 14, and there was a poster of them in, I don't think it would have been Smash Hits, I think Smash Hits was defunct by then. Oh. It might have been TV Hits magazine or Live and Cooking. And Toby is very, like, proto sort of indie boy.
Yeah.
And he had, I think, quite big...
What sort of band would Catch? I've never heard of them.
Well, so I went on a very sad Wikipedia dive. The, you know, spoiler is, Toby died in December.
Oh, my God.
He was 42. But he was involved in a musical movement that I cannot remember the name of, but I think it's sort of the precursor to all of that stuff, like the Rapture and the Von Bondies and that kind of... mid-aughts indie amnesty. I was an obnoxious, that's sort of my university days.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, sort of side fringe, bad kind of
music
mullety,
snob.
Tony and Guy highlights. No, I wasn't a snob, Margaret. I had the Fratelli's album.
Oh, okay. I mean, was it visible in your room or did you hide it away?
No, it was the year of Mr. Brightside. It was, I think, the last sort of... actually, my friend Holly Bourne has wrote a brilliant, brilliant book. It's called Girlfriends, and it's so good. It's coming in September. I recommend pre-order early, pre-order often. But it's about that. She talks about going to Reading in 2003, I think, and I was there, and Metallica headlining, and it's such a heady, painful, brilliant, awful book about... boys defining themselves by the music they like and girls defining themselves by liking the music that boys like. And I think of all the parties I was ever at, we'd be listening to like the Immaculate Collection, having a lovely time, and some boy would come and I'd be like, oh no, what is this? I've got to put Metallica on. Yeah. And they'd all just like, there'd be no dancing, just standing.
Oh God.
To Metallica songs that are all about half an hour long. And just that, I must tailor the things I like to... I was quite old until I realised I didn't actually like the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, God. I mean, it's really sad, isn't it, to sort of, what we wasted our time pretending that we enjoyed.
It is desperately sad when I think so many of our crushes are based on fandom, which is the opposite, which is loving something and having a really intense creative response. I love so much the way a fan... understands the assignment, responds to a brief. So my first sort of proper magazine job was Bliss magazine.
Oh.
Bliss magazine, teen mag, where you were basically a sort of... You're like a pop custodian for fans. I think, obviously, I wasn't, you know, in a mine, I wasn't working for the NHS, I wasn't doing anything, I wasn't changing lives. But I was, because I felt that this is a position of huge responsibility. Our readers love One Direction. They love JLS so passionately.
Yeah.
I've got to represent. I'm here as a fan. I'm here as a journalist, but I'm not here to be cool. I am here to do right by all of these people, because there are people who are reading this magazine who would die to be in my place.
Oh my
I've
God.
Seen JLS
really
live
emotional.
More times than any other band.
Really? Oh, wow. It's so... I was just thinking this the other day about a friend of mine called Claire, who I would like to do a shout out to. I know she listens to the podcast. She lives in Canada now. And she was not... I was an indie snob at university. I will confess to it, though I did always like some pop. And I remember her just loving Wannabe when it came out. And I my initial thing was to sneer about it and just be like, oh God, what is this thing with three choruses and made up words? Oh my God. And just watching her joy, like we used to call her Enthusiastic Claire. Watching her joy made me go, do you know what? I'm not going to be a dick about this. I think this is fun. And then obviously the Spice Girls became more and more fun. And obviously corporate nightmares and, you know, whatever. I'm not saying it was all amazing. But I'm so pleased that I allowed myself and that she, it was like she gave me permission to go, do you know what? Not everything does have to be heavy and serious and Joy Division, much as I love them. You know, I can also get on the dance floor and zigga zigga. I can't believe I just said that.
But it stands the test of time. It's 25 years old, 30 years old.
Yeah.
I know it just had a big anniversary. And yeah. I think of all the records that came out around then. And you still, you hear the laugh and that sort of twang and those first four bars. And you're like,
yeah.
It's... You're still, no, I'm happy whenever I hear that. And like, Wham.
Yeah, yeah, similar.
And that is stuff that's sort of so easy to dismiss at the time.
Yes, like, yeah, and you sort of go, well, what's wrong with
it's
with
pure and exhilarating and brilliant. And I think so often the things that where the joy is just there and it's easy and we don't have to really like contort ourselves
yeah.
to feel it and understand it. And we think because our response feels so pure and simple, another banger.
Yeah, another banger. No, always into that too. Just the one song. I don't think they did a third album, did they?
Oh, not that I know about.
But yeah, I think I was so worried. I was so worried that people were looking at me and going, oh God, you're such a girl, you know, and that being a bad thing. And I feel really sorry for my younger self. And I wasn't that bad. I did genuinely love the music I loved and, you know, but films particularly, I think about how much I loved Steel Magnolias and still love it and still watch it regularly. I absolutely wouldn't have admitted that at the time. I watched it and my sister and I used to quote it and it was fun and whatever. But I think I would have been properly ashamed to tell people that how much I loved that film. Beaches, you know. And
oh,
sort of think,
my God, Beaches.
It's just, it's a great film just because it's girls.
I'm practically crying. It's a really, I think, subtle and sophisticated story, even though it inspires a lavish emotional response performance of Bette's life. Just thinking about
Miss Piggy, great Miss Piggy energy there. God.
Such Miss Piggy energy, my goodness. The time I wasted talking to boys at parties about Pulp Fiction and watching Pulp Fiction and forming critical responses to it. And it's just such a boy's idea of what's cool.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, it's just that we never got to say what was... Well, just... Cool's a tricky one, isn't it?
And that's what's sort of amazing now, I think, because we have, you know, Everything I Know About Love, the book and the TV show, which I adore.
Same.
And I think Dolly's fabulous, and I know she's fabulous on this podcast. And that's about, you know, that's so, so brilliant on crushes and amazing women and, you know, being drained by the extent of their crush energy. Also, you know, Fleabag and that being a phenomenon and, you know, Starstruck, as he said, I'm obsessed with Hacks. I love that show. Mm-hmm. Broad City. There are so many, like now, and I think, you know, it's like cool women are making cool things. And there's also a bit of a backlash that, oh, but it's always like the hot messes and like, men and women, and we're kind of going to go like, no, we've had nothing forever. This is like...
We are thirsty
hundreds and thousands
for
of
this.
Years, yeah. We just get what almost 10 years of stuff, and like this is the beginning of, I hope, hundreds and thousands of years of it. And,
yeah,
and it's funny. The stuff I love is funny. So much boy stuff is not, which is because I know he comes up a lot. Was that what it was about Hugh Laurie? Was that he was funny on your terms?
Yeah. Yeah, completely that. I mean, I have spoken a bit about how I wanted to be him. You know, looking back, I wanted to be near him. I wanted to be him. But it's still my number one. I mean, it's a terrible thing. So it's like GSOH, that's what I like in someone. But I had a friend who once said to me, I don't think you have a type. It's just funny. Like, it's only funny. I think I could get past almost anything. To a fault, genuinely to a fault, if somebody is funny. And also laughs at my jokes as well, you know.
All of my, I think, adult crushes have been on comics. Now I'm not going to, you know, that's going to leer at you and give you a big wink.
Daisy, please.
Copy. But I'm obsessed with Taskmaster. And
yeah, me too.
Every series I have to, there's normally a boy and a girl. I think this last series, it's been Sophie Duker and she won the Perrier. It's not called
Bridget
the Perrier
Christie.
Anymore. Bridget Christie.
My good friend Bridget Christie, who refuses to do this podcast.
Bridget! It's been on off menu. I've heard her.
Food's one thing, you know.
How very dash. Is it because she's scared? But, you know,
I don't know what. I don't want to speak for
Daisy
her.
Character will be lurking in the shadows.
But yeah, Bridget is.
But I think what I loved is her whole like outfit and look. And
yeah.
Sort of look kind of young Van Morrison vibe with a hat. Or a sort
well,
of
my husband was saying it was a Mick Fleetwood.
Oh, of course.
I wonder if
course,
it's specifically the Mick Fleetwood
Mick
look.
Mick Fleetwood
yeah.
during
is
the tasks.
yes.
And then Stevie Nicks in the panel on the show.
Both people that I would not have had the guts to admire their style again, you know, when I was younger and trying to fit into the Britpop era, you know, I did. I do remember a friend of mine's. I was bemoaning the fact that no one ever fancied me, and a friend of mine saying, "Oh, you don't dress like the indie girls," and I was like, "Oh," and another friend said, "You dress like the indie boys." I was like, "No, that's not what they want."
Another great book about sex and crushes. Sorry, this is
no. Come on, no. You need to. You know, we need to.
I have to book podcast. No, read books. Florence Given's book, Girl Crush.
Oh,
and
I don't know.
The title is It's Coming. I think next.
Oh,
August.
Okay. My God, this is amazing.
It's coming and it's coming. It's pretty raunchy. But Florence Given, the artist and the author of Women Who Don't Know. Women who don't know, sorry, women don't know you pretty.
Women don't know when they're pretty.
Women
that's
don't
what One Direction
owe
sing about.
You pretty, which is a very different proposition. And
yeah, I haven't read it, but I love the title. I was like, I need to get that for my daughter. Whatever.
One of her most famous pieces, it reads, maybe it's a girl crush, maybe you're queer. And it's about fancying people for the first time and how the main character is trying to work out like what she's like. She breaks up with a terrible boy and she's in her mid-20s and is like, I've got all these feelings, I'm too scared to investigate them. Also, how do I signal to people, how do I present myself and show this is who I am? And I think that's a big
I should dig it out. I have a letter from a friend in sixth form where she in detail tells me how to flirt. And I just couldn't do any of it. I remember one of them was put perfume in your hair, and I may have attempted that, but no one was getting near my hair to smell it. I remember show your wrists. That's the only other one I remember, because I remember thinking, I don't know how to do it. Yeah, we're both doing it now.
I did know, and I sort of...
Raise the roof.
I'm more Lady Vicar. We're all God's children. It's going to be like getting off with your sister. Come on.
It's actually very hot. I remember, I mean, to be fair, I didn't think, like, I was never going to do what she told me to do, because, I mean, actually, the idea that people would know that I was flirting would have been mortifying anyway.
Yes, because
she just was absolutely happy to be visibly flirting with everyone who came near her, and I just couldn't have handled it.
I was at school with an amazing girl like that called Fran, and we've not stayed in touch, and I think of her often and I miss her. And she was incredible. And there was another girl whose flirting was seen very kind of manipulative, and she was sort of being a bit of a slinky cat. And, you know, she was very pretty and a lot of boys liked her. And there was a kind of real, like, calculated aspect, whereas Fran was just sunshine and joy. And she just seemed so happy and so curious and compassionate and glad to be alive and glad to be with you.
Oh my God, imagine knowing that works that early on.
Her whole energy, it wasn't, and she was not, you know, trying to make anyone think anything about her as the other girl, but she was more like, I'm just
I'm me, and I know it, and I want to get to know you.
And did everyone fancy her?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I do wonder, what did she look like?
Well, that's the thing as well. She was really, you know, pretty for sure, but not someone who you'd necessarily
quite
petite, really sporty, was often just like glasses, no makeup, you know, sometimes sort of make a bit of an effort, but just seemed really chill.
Oh God, that's amazing. I wish I'd had that example, I feel like, because even the...
I wish I could do it now.
Yeah, yeah, at all. The girl who sent me that letter, even if I'd been able to do it, I was like, I would have been like, I don't look like her. She is gorgeous, and she was gorgeous. So even if I do all of that, it's not going to work. So what's the point? You know, all I would be doing is exposing the fact that I fancied people, which was so embarrassing.
Well, something I've written, it's complicated to talk about, because I think that now in these, you know, open, gender fluid, a time...
Fabulous times, were you going to call them?
Certain comedy things are made very, 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 very badly, and certain sort of sketches with people in drag. But I always felt like Emily in Little Britain, that me trying to be a flirty lady was that. And I was like,
God,
twirling a parasol, go, good day, sir, like, not convincing anyone of anything.
You're right. That is the interesting thing about that.
I've been rewatching old episodes of The Kids in the Hall, and there's a great documentary about that. And I, you know, fancying them all, and fancying some of them more when they dress as women.
Oh, wow.
I was talking to my friend and yours, Julia Rayside.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
And, Howard's Way fan.
She fancied Hamlet.
The generosity of that show, and that they're playing women. They're not presenting them as caricatures. And
yeah.
I was like, is this because it's so many sketch shows have not aged well.
No.
And this is still great.
Well, it's interesting
great.
You say that, because we were watching League of Gentlemen, decided to show that to my daughter for the first time. And the Babs Cabs thing does not age well, but I do think it's really interesting that all of the female characters they played are absolutely, it's not a, oh, how hilarious, I'm pretending to be a woman. They are absolutely deep and rich, and, you know, there's as much care and, you know, observation has gone in to them. And and that's such a relief, you know, it's such a good thing. I was thinking that about your Emily thing. I would very rarely wear a dress, but basically as soon as anyone said, you're wearing a dress, I would just die inside and, you know, put my coat on for the rest of the thing. But it's so weird, because I think it was meant in the spirit of, oh, how exciting, you're dressed up. But it's, to me, it's like, it was somebody going, oh, you care. That's so uncool.
God,
and it's not like I was that bothered about being cool, but just so exposing.
But I think I wonder whether we've come out of a long and dark period where any sign of caring about anything was like, no.
Yes.
And we've just
met.
But I get the impression, as an avid podcast fan, that, you know, you and me are both quite intense people who, when we like things, we really like them.
Yeah.
And that's what crushes are all about.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, funnily enough, I felt able to do that in the fandom, the fandom of the things that I liked. But in the, presenting myself to the world, apart from as a fan, like, I didn't wear anything but band T-shirts for years and years, you know. And it was, I mean, I'd have rules about the band T-shirts that I would wear as well. It's like, no, you have to own at least an album before you wear the T-shirt, you know. So that thing of that.
In case a boy caught you.
Well, it was a little bit of that, but I have to say, I did just really, I mean, I still find it a bit weird when children wear Ramones T-shirts and stuff. And I know that's a proper cliche these days, and who cares? But I remember a boy wearing a Kingmaker T-shirt at a party that I was at. You probably haven't heard of Kingmaker.
I have not, actually.
No, they were...
Were they as good as Catch? Oh.
I'll have to listen to some Catch.
Definitely had a low-key crush on Brett Anderson.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, who didn't? Suede supported Kingmaker very early on. They were sort of that era.
And Kingmakers they were.
They were very good. See, you're a journalist. but no, I remember a boy being at a party with a Kingmaker T-shirt and me going, oh, do you like Kingmaker? Do you like Eat Yourself Whole? And he had no idea what I was talking about. He liked the logo. It was a good logo, to be fair. But it was, I have to say, yeah, I quite enjoyed that role reversal. I didn't give him that hard a time, but I probably gave him a bit of a hard time. The difference is, I don't think he gave a shit. You know, he's like, what? I like the T-shirt. You know, he just had that confidence, whereas I absolutely would have crumbled. Well, I wouldn't have crumbled with my T-shirt. I would have started listing B-sides until until they left me alone.
And you know the original lyric was Thursday. They changed it to Tuesday.
Exactly. And everybody loves that. That's so hot, isn't it? Somebody just being endlessly completist and weird about something.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah, that's like the way we kind of prepare to be fancied like it's a test, yep. Like it's a driving test.
Awful.
And someone's, not that someone's going to jump out of a bush and attack us, which is horribly the likelihood, but someone's going to jump out of a bush and say, I don't know, Stroke's second album, track listing, please.
Go. But I think I was like that when I was sort of looking for a boyfriend. I fancied a friend of mine, and he absolutely knew it, quite early on, and was just very patient, never fancied me. I used to do that thing of going EastEnders or Coronation Street, you know, cakes or biscuits, whatever, and he would answer, and it's a tiring thing to do after a while. It's not that fun, but mentally I was doing it because I was like, you know, if we tot up those scores and we are, you know, we're both the same, then that means, you know, E equals you have to go out with me now, sort of thing. And it's just, it's ridiculous that anyone ever thinks that that works, that that's a sort of like, but we've got loads in common, so this must work, right? And it's just, it's a nonsense. I remember getting together with my husband, and when I got and talking to some friends after I'd met him and saying I really like him, and I said he doesn't, and someone said, what team does he support? And I said, he doesn't like football, and he likes jazz. And I remember the look on my friend's face just being like almost like, you poor thing. This is a disaster. This is clearly a disaster. But I knew at that point that that didn't matter, you know, that it's going to be difficult sort of listening to jazz ever, but that was not the issue.
And actually, with my husband, he is really, really cool and likes a lot of cool music. The thing that sort of staggered me when we met was how he was so curious about what I liked and had absolutely no, you know, he wanted to share. He was really excited about sharing, but there was no like, look, let me sit you down and tell you the things that you need
you're
to like.
Going to have to
and
learn.
We've got quite different musical tastes, I think, and there are things that we converge. We joke that a lot of it is based on the fact that we both like the Style Council more than we like the Jam.
It is telling, you know.
But you know, he's very, and there every so often there's something. Like I remember when like he came home with Lemonade on vinyl. I think it was the album before.
That's hot.
Or yeah, just in a real kind of, because he's just really, really, he's not a completist, but he's sort of curious about the world. Actually, you can tell he's not completist because at the moment I think he keeps like replacing vinyl that he sold 20 years ago. So maybe he is a bitch. but I don't know. I do sometimes actually still worry, like, oh, is he going to leave me for a cool person who always knows what he's talking about? And is he bothered that I still love Mariah Carey and Cameo? And I
Cameo.
But then I had
Cameo. Did Cameo have a third album?
I don't. Oh my God! Though they're two perfect singles.
Sure.
I think. but then I was thinking about how sometimes sort of connecting over something and loving it together is so exciting as
well.
Yeah,
finding new
having
things.
Having mutual obsessions.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember a guy, and it was like he was the new boyfriend of a friend, so there was it wasn't a flirty thing at all. And he talked about cars for quite a long time, which sounds like, still now when I say
Gary
it, sounds
Newman's
like my
cars.
Oh, that would have been amazing. Still now sounds, as I say it, like a complete nightmare. But actually, the way he talked about it, it was just like, oh, this is easy to listen to and to ask questions about because it's something he's passionate about and he's quite articulate and he's explaining this. And this isn't, I'm not saying I would want to talk about cars forever because it was a little bit of an interview. But actually, having someone who's passionate is so much better than having someone who is cool and won't, you know, won't talk with any enthusiasm about anything. We'll just tell you what's shit and what's shit about Steel Magnolias, for example, beaches.
Oh, well, I'd hear it. But it's almost like hosting a podcast that you're not recording, I suppose.
I consider all my conversations that aren't recorded a podcast that I'm not recording.
Well, as you should.
Always be ready.
In case people
I should
need
just
audio
record
content.
Everything. Sure.
For legal reasons.
We've got to the point where we need to talk about your biggest crush so we can do the maths.
Gosh, is it really?
I know, I'm sorry. It's gone so quickly. I feel like we've got so much more to get through.
It's just the
come
beginning.
Back, come back another time.
I would love that. I think we've got to go for the OG, haven't we? It's got to be Declan Donnelly.
Yeah, it's a good one. And it's a good long name.
I mean, I think I've done this.
Oh, have you? Let's
not
find...
in some time, because also
all right, can you remember,
we had
though?
A regional rule that was very convenient for anyone who didn't get what they wanted, where if it was like under 50, you had to double it.
Oh my God, that so ruins the science. So unscientific, it's upsetting.
Very convenient, isn't it?
Ridiculous. Okay, so can you remember, what do you think that it was?
Oh, good Lord. I want to say 64%. I don't know why. That's the old Libra
Pisces. I'll do this more carefully than I usually do. Because I usually just panic. No, this says 88. He has got... There's two L's in Donnelly, isn't there?
Yeah. I'm sure there are two N's.
Oh, no, hang on. Yeah, but the N's doesn't matter, does it?
Yeah, Donnelly with one L would look weird, wouldn't it?
Yeah, it definitely would.
88%.
So that's 88%. I'm so sorry that you're stuck with this awful husband.
I know. Well, I'm just going to have to leave him.
I mean, that sounds absolutely fair enough. And I hope that maybe you'll be our first podcast guest who actually has gone on to leave their partner.
I mean, I can't wait.
For their crush.
Instead of vows at our wedding, I'll just recite the track listing for the third album.
Or you could just read out the maths that you've done for this. Just proof. Poor Declan in his gag.
And I can do the flirty open wrist thing, Lady Vicar, and I'll marry us both.
Well, I hope I'm invited.
Oh, absolutely. Guest of honour.
Thank you very much, Daisy Buchanan.
Thank you so much.
Crushed by Margaret Caborn Smith was hosted by Margaret Caborn Smith and produced by Sophie Black. Thanks to everyone at the amazing TVC Soho. And if you enjoy the podcast, please remember to like and subscribe, as it helps people find where we are.